Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is a repeat, I'm happy to say. Joan Gray, who was with us once before talking about caregiving, is back. I asked her to come back because on the way out you said the most charming and interesting thing, and you talked about writing a love letter to people who were, these were not your words, but people who are hard to love. And how do you do that? And I thought, how wonderful to be able to talk to Joan about just that topic. And as a caregiver, you must be called upon to really love people who are not in a most in their most lovable stage through no fault of their own.
Absolutely.
And you could always say it's through no fault of their
own. It isn't through their fault of their own. They're ill.
Talk about that
illnesses
a little bit.
And I've had a number of clients that and not even clients, people that you know that get ill. I even experienced it a little bit with my husband when he got ill, this fatal illness, and the anger. And so you have to continue to show up, care for them, and do it straight from the heart and not take any of it personal.
Oh, so there's the issue. So you know, you have to know that it's not directed at you.
Oh, no. You absolutely know that. And if you don't, you will. Mm-hmm. If you don't know that at first, you will. You just have to stop and assess the situation and then put yourself in the place of the other person and think, how do you think you would be reacting?
So the first thing you have to do is kind of get a hold of yourself.
You have to keep a hold of yourself.
Yes. Good.
You have to hold the reins.
Well put.
Yeah, because especially in with somebody with an illness or anything, it could be physical, mental, spiritual, whatever, and we never know what anybody's going through. So
that's right.
We never know what anybody's going through.
So you have to really keep in mind, I'm guessing, that what it is you love about them is still there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how do you, I mean, besides getting hold of yourself, what is it you say to a person who's being really difficult? And, you know, it's not fair to say abusive because they're not deliberately doing something to you, but it can feel like that.
Well, first of all, I stop talking and I listen to them. Because some people, they not feel like they're not being heard. That's one of the big things. And then I attune myself to whatever is going on around them and let them know, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're going through, but I understand. I can feel your pain. I understand. And take it forward. You have to move forward. And just be as kind and more gentle. I also remember, I would like somebody to be treating me or my mother like I would treat them. And my mother, when she was ill, she became a little angry at the end. And what are you going to do, be mad at somebody for? You're dying. You're dying.
Oh, my goodness. How sad a realization.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And
but you still have to, how do you remove yourself from the onslaught of what can really feel like abusive behavior, even if it's just cold or narcissistic?
Well, you know, I do pray.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, get quiet and meditate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And
you wait for people to come out of it and they will?
Oh, yeah. Most of the time they do.
Okay.
And a lot of people know that they went through it. And they really appreciate that you didn't lash back.
Uh-huh.
You know, lashing back.
You think they notice that?
Well, especially afterwards. If they're looking at you, especially if they're looking at you, they know the wounded look on someone's face.
Mm-hmm.
I know the wounded look on someone's face when I do something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sneeze.
Go right ahead. Bless you.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, sometimes they realize it, sometimes they don't. And you know what? It's a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, it's a long moment. But
oh, that's a good point, though, because it's very easy to think that the pain you're in at that moment is the whole of it.
Right.
That's forever.
Right. And
moments pass.
And think about people with Alzheimer's. They change the whole brain changes, and they become something that they don't. I'm not even aware of, no less.
Have you worked with Alzheimer's?
Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I do trainings to keep that one, for that particular one. I go to the Alzheimer's Association. They have conferences in Forrester City on a regular basis. They had a couple here in San Francisco last month, I believe. And other people are meeting and telling their story, and other family members, other caregivers, and just sharing experience, strength, and hopes. And it just takes the pain and the weight out of it to let you know, especially somebody, a wife or a husband taking care of their mate, and the person becomes abusive and ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thinking that that's the only one, they're the only one that that's happening to. When other people are sharing that this person turned into something different, and like, whoa, I thought I was the only one. It takes the burden off of the shoulders. Yes. Like, this is part of that disease. This is part of the disease.
Now, what about people who are not sick?
Oh,
and who are just difficult to love for other reasons.
Sometimes you have to love them from a distance.
Okay, all right. Yes, that's a good point.
Sometimes we have to love people from a distance. And that's happened with me, and I'm sure people have loved me from a distance at some time. All of us are, I believe, I don't know anybody that's perfect out here, especially myself, that someone's had to love me from a distance. I know that I can become very nasty, condescending.
I can't picture it, yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, all of us have our moments.
Right,
all of us have our moments. I'm healthier than an ox, and everybody's got their moments. Mm-hmm. And there are people that still love me and may love me from a distance in spite of it. And some people because of it, you know. So everybody gets a turn. Everybody has to go through it. And I don't know. I won't want everybody. There are people that will turn their back on you. It's not a given that someone is going to be there for you when you're ill, when you're feeling bad, when you're cranky, when you're nasty, when you say something you don't mean. They're not going to accept your apology. The thing is to make it, when you make an amends, is to change the behavior. You can. Doesn't mean that they'll accept it.
Okay. Right.
Doesn't mean that they will
now,
accept
it. And actually, you know, something just to bring it home to love letters. Exactly that.
Exactly.
You can put your whole heart into an envelope and send it with the apology and with the amends.
Right.
And it doesn't mean they'll accept it,
right.
But you've done your part.
That's
okay.
Right. Got to keep your side of the street clean. Absolutely.
Thank you. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you're never the worse off for offering love and friendship and apology.
Absolutely.
Even if it doesn't get accepted, that's not a bad reflection on you.
It's actually a very big thing. It's a big person. There's all of this stuff going around, the hatred, the racism, all of these things. And listen, nobody is going to, one person can change an instance by a smile, a thank you, excuse me, can I get that for you? It takes a very big person, not a small-minded person, but a very big-minded, big-hearted person. It's not giving in, it's not surrendering, it's just sharing from, bringing it from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Opening up your heart.
You know, I had an experience once, I'm going to just share with you and the whole world, because I was pulling out, it was late at night, and I was coming home from a dance rehearsal, and I was pulling out of a space on Mission Street, and it was dark, and it's not a great, safe area, so they say, although I've never had trouble, but anyway. That whole business of what's not safe and what is so much internal sometimes.
That's right.
But anyway, so I pulled out, and I just about crashed to this man driving. He stopped, and he started swearing at me, and that's just screaming at me and making a fist, and then he drove on just in total anger, and I gunned it, and I caught up with him. And I motioned, roll down your window. And I said, I am so sorry. I just want to apologize. That was awful what I did. I didn't even see you. I don't even know where to start by saying how sorry I am that I terrified you. And he broke into such a smile. And he was a threatening looking guy in his angry mode. I mean, no doubt about it. He broke into the smile. He said, oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it. Now, 14 seconds earlier, if he had had a gun, I'm sure I'd have been a goner.
Right.
So, yes.
Yeah, that's
changing an instant.
It changed. It's an instant, and it's okay.
And he was lovely. He was such a forgiving person.
And that may not be
that may not be all the time we
that's
get.
Right. That's right. But it's a little dangerous to do that. But apologizing is always a good thing. Because I'm from New York.
Uh-huh.
Driving here in California, I think people are half the time insane.
Oh yeah.
No manners, don't give the right away, no driving courtesy.
And not a hell of a lot of skill sometimes.
And
either.
Then they get mad at you when you beep your horn say, "Oh my God, what did you do?" They get mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
But if just somebody letting me in, I wave my hand, say thank you. You know, you nod, you do.
Oh yes, acknowledge. Yes.
And the mood changes. When something happens, somebody can cut me off and almost kill me and then say, throw up a peace sign. No, I'm sorry, I'm not that easy, but Right. It takes a moment.
Oh, sometimes that, yes, I've seen that. That can be a little facetious, too.
That it is, exactly.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So, but to just give somebody some common courtesy goes a really long way.
Mm-hmm.
Long, long way. And if it doesn't for them, it does it for me.
Yes, exactly.
It does it for me. Yeah. Now, I'm not always that way.
You at least get to bathe in your own positive.
Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah. And even when I see someone doing something stupid that really pisses me off, I think, oh, man, I did that yesterday.
Oh
gosh.
Yes.
You know, so have a little empathy for the other person. And I can get mad, but it's not really mad at them. I get mad at
yourself. You also have to hit that, you
know,
who do I think I'm kidding mode because I did it yesterday.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Because you can start, when I start thinking that, I start laughing. It's like, that's right, Miss Perfect. You just point the finger at everybody else in the world, you know, and when I point the finger, there are three pointing back at me.
Yes. Okay, good. And what was your growing up life? You said in New York. What was that?
Well, it actually was.
What were your parents like?
I grew up in New Jersey and upstate New York. My parents, my father worked. He was a truck driver. My mom at first was a stay-at-home mom for a really long time.
You have one sister?
Oh,
no. What do you have?
I have two. There were six of us.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Well, I only have one sister here in California,
yes,
the one that you see in pictures all the time. No, I'm number five out of six.
Oh. All
and
girls?
Oh, God forbid. I'm the baby girl, though, which I don't know, it's a weird spot to be in. But everybody thinks their spot is weird. The middle one, the oldest one, the baby. And growing up was, I mean, we grew up 5 minutes out of Manhattan. And up, we had a great-grandparents. I had three great-grandparents alive at one time, grandparents on both sides. And,
well, so you had a lot of good family warmth.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And we went to the country on the weekends and, you know, lived on a farm on the summers and the weekends and holidays and lived in the city during the week. one place, you go down the street, go to the A&P and go to the store. And down at the other place, you go down the road and get a gallon of milk from a cow that just milked. You go there and get eggs. You know, this one, you go to the garden and pick dinner. Your grandfather went hunting. And
so how did you end up in California?
Oh, well, I got married at, I was almost 50 years old, 51 years old. And that was in upstate New York. We lived upstate New York. And that was in 2003. And in 2006, my husband got sick with cancer. That's right. He got sick with cancer. And 6 months into that, my mother became ill with cancer. And they passed away 4 days apart. And
I remember that.
In August, I was already on my way to Reno. I went to Reno in July for a vacation and just decided to stay.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very painful to be there in New York and in New Jersey.
Oh.
And I left Reno a year and a half later. I went back to New York and I cried for 9 months.
Oh.
And so my sister called me one day. My sister, who's been here since 1977. And she called, I think it was July 4th, July 5th. And she said, "Joan, do you want to come to California?" I said, "Hang up." She said, "What?" I said, "Hang up the phone." She hung up the phone. I called airlines, made a reservation. I called her back. She said, "What did you do that for?" I said, I wanted to make an airline reservation before you changed your mind.
That's wonderful. Now, how did you meet your husband? And if you don't mind talking about this romance, because you said you were almost 50 when you got married for the first time.
Yes, 51 years.
I think that's just wonderful.
51, yes.
And let's be encouraging to all the girls out there and young women and middle-aged women who think
I met my husband through a friend.
Mm-hmm.
A woman, I don't think I ever saw her again after that. She kind of disappeared, but we went to a dance together in Albany, New York, and he was kind of cute, but he was from Newark, New Jersey, and we...
So what did that mean to you?
For me, we are the same race, had the same culture, but totally different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in a different...
His more urban or something?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Extreme. He had tattoos on his face and on his neck and stuff. And he just grew up different, you know? And But my friends encouraged me to date, and also fear. You know, it was a lot of fear of, like, you know, what if this doesn't work out? Because I'd been in long-term relationships, 5 years and they change your mind, 8 years, they change your mind, all of that stuff, and I was tired. But I had been on a dating thing, regiment. Uh-huh. No, dating regiment. Uh-huh. But, and I went to dated people 30, 60, and 90 days. If 30 days, you give somebody a chance. You know, you want to go to the next 30 days, mm-hmm. and you know if you want to go to the next 30 days. Now, I was really looking for a life partner. Mm-hmm. And I had discussions with people. This is what I'm looking for. This is not what you're looking for. Don't even come here. Don't even, because I'm
looking. Oh, good. So you were able to say that to the man that you.
Oh, yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, yes.
Because women are afraid sometimes, I hear, about saying too much too soon.
Well, this is what I'm looking for. But I mean, I think you're nice, great. I'm looking for a partner. If you're not looking for a partner, if you want to play, mm-hmm. that's cute. Nice.
I've already played enough.
But no, I don't even mind playing sometimes, but this is not that. I wasn't in that mode. I wasn't mm-hmm. in that play mode. I always wasn't looking for a partner. You know, mm-hmm. you want to play, you want to continue to play, then that's not what I'm, mm-hmm. my goal is future. I'm looking
for
a future.
What was his, and had he ever been married before?
He had been married before. Mm-hmm. And he said, figured he'd give it a chance, you know. I don't know if he really thought that he would get married again. Honestly, sometimes people say yeah, and don't really mean it. But as we
and
got
sometimes
to,
they say no, and it turns out, uh-huh.
Right. So we just got to know each other. We had a lot of things in common, and we had a lot of differences.
What can you say what the differences were?
The differences. He loved basketball. He loved sports. And he dressed always sporty, sneakers, mm-hmm. always a sharp outfit with a little baseball cap on, mm-hmm. and matched lovely. And I have sneakers now, but I don't really, it's like when I get ready to go out somewhere, I don't think of like matching my hat and my sneakers and my little cute outfit. Uh-huh. You know, I want some shoes. I want some linen clothes.
So you're a little more formal.
Yes.
Okay.
And I really wanted to change it.
So you're saying that like you dressed in a certain way and you both had to make a statement about who
and
you
I
were.
Had an expectation that he would also.
But he was maybe.
But I had to accept him where he was. It was like I would buy shoes, I'd buy this, yeah. I'd buy that. And
so you wanted to change him?
I wanted to change him. And we had a discussion about, you know, this is who I am. And he said, like, this is who I am. I don't want you buying me stuff. Uh-huh. And either this is what you take this, the person I am, or you.
Isn't that kind of a relief to you? Doesn't that take a whole bunch of stuff off your to-do list if you know you can't change him?
Oh, well, yeah, it was okay.
It sounds to me like a blessed relief.
We went out New Year's Eve once. We went to a dance back in Albany because we were a little further downstate, and it was New Year's Eve. I wore cream chiffon with heels.
My, yes.
A flowing chiffon, three-piece outfit, pants, big leg pants, and he wore a blue, soft baby blue jogging whatever suit with his baseball cap and his sneakers. And we looked fabulous together. It was really weird, but I was like, he can be himself and I could be myself.
But it's not like he was a sloppy guy.
No, not sloppy. Not sloppy.
Just a different, yeah.
But the outfit that I was in,
yeah.
I mean, you needed a suit.
Right.
Well, my expectation.
Yes.
Right. But just accepting him the way he was, mm-hmm. it worked out really, really well. And you're right. And he wanted to buy me jewelry and a leather coat and stuff. I don't wear leather.
I don't either.
I don't like jewelry. If you will go together and buy some jewelry, or pay attention, because you can go to one of my boutiques and they have a list of what
I
want.
Yes, you don't want. What
I have.
Yes.
We lived in a small town, and there was two boutiques.
And you don't want people buying something you don't like, and then you have to pretend you do.
Right. Yeah, I'm not a good pretender.
No, that's what I love about you.
And matter of fact, how it worked the best was I'd buy a gift for myself, I'd wrap it, and when the time came, I opened it in front of him and acted surprised. And we knew what he wanted. He loved big games. I hate games.
Like you're doing with your thumbs, like video things.
Video,
on his
my
devices.
God. Halo, I can't stand him. And he liked his Xbox, and I liked to read or listen to music. I mean, he loved music and different things like that, but he had a room for that. We shared televisions, But he had a room. He had a television. I had a television. Everybody had a remote control. We do not, like, fight over remote control. That's my TV. And when we got married, he had some stuff. I had some stuff. And then we got some stuff. His stuff wasn't my stuff, and my stuff wasn't his.
Mm-hmm.
It was like yours, yes, mine, and ours.
Yes.
And I don't know. It was fun. Actually, it was actually more fun than I thought.
But what you did both like was each other.
Right. Right. Oh, definitely. We really liked each other. We loved each other, and he made me smile.
Mm-hmm.
He made me laugh,
mm-hmm.
And I'm a difficult person to live with. I think I've been single most of my life.
Yes.
And make
allowances for what,
right,
somebody else is.
And
yeah. He
accepted my idiosyncrasies and didn't want to change them. He went with them. He didn't tell me I was crazy for them.
Can you say what some of them are?
Yes. The princess and the pea.
Oh,
in the bed.
Oh, yes. One
there's
little
a grain
wrinkle,
or a grain of sand. I can feel it. He couldn't.
Me too.
And I'd say, you know, we need to change the sheets. And he'd get up in the middle of the night and change the sheets. And as he accepted all of that, do you know that stuff changed? Stuff that I had done all my life changed when he never complained about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I woke him up, he said, I know, we got to change the sheets. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's right. And then eventually that stuff, and I still don't, I was doing that last night, and I thought about him last night touching this little grain of sand in the bed. I didn't have to change the sheet. I brushed it out of the bed. I brushed it really good. I smiled and got back in the bed. Yeah, and that brings a huge smile to my face and a glint in my eye. Yeah, and he...
So in the ways that you grew... He's still with you.
Right, absolutely. Oh. And he was a Vietnam vet,
mm-hmm.
And he had night terrors.
Oh, God.
And so he was afraid of hurting me at night. And when he started, I could feel him doing his little shaky thing. I'd get out of bed, and he'd jump up. Did I hurt you? I was like, nope, you didn't hurt me. He's like, and he used to have that fear. And
yes.
I was like, yeah. But no, he would never did anything, never scared me. He was, I look like the aggressor. And I sound like the aggressor. He was soft-spoken.
Mm-hmm.
He was the strongest man that I know.
Mm-hmm.
People would say, oh, man, she's this and she's that. He said, I want to find out for myself. He never listened to gossip or somebody else's opinion of me.
Oh, I'm going to cry this
long. And as a matter of fact, I'll be on a cruise ship the anniversary of his and my mother's death, April 30th and May 4th. My sister and I are cruising to Hawaii. And I want to do something. We'll arrive on the 4th. We're leaving out of San Francisco. I will arrive on the 4th anniversary of my mother's death. And they give you these leis when you go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
So I think I want to send one of my leis overboard and as a little tribute to my mother.
Yes.
And it's also going to be a full moon that night. So there's something. I don't know exactly what, but on April 30th, I want to do something also special on the cruise ship. Our last vacation that we did together was we cruised to the Caribbean. We cruised to the Virgin Islands,
mm-hmm.
And we did an 11-day cruise. And, you know, he was more free that trip than he'd ever been in his life, I believe.
Even though he was sick.
He's sick,
yeah.
And not knowing he was dying,
yes.
Even. He took salsa lessons, stuff I wanted him to do like years before. He dressed in colorful, goofy clothes,
mm-hmm.
Like I did.
Mm-hmm.
He got a shirt to the sarong that I,
mm-hmm.
I the lady said, there's a shirt that to match that for your husband. I said, he will never wear that. I said, honey, you want to laugh? He said, she's got a shirt that will match this bright blue and yellow sarong. He says, okay. I was like, alrighty then.
And you have pictures of all this.
I do have pictures of everything, of all of it.
What was his proposal?
His proposal? Oh, it wasn't grand.
Mm-hmm.
We were living together because his building was being sold. His apartment building was being sold.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him he could temporarily live with me because I wasn't living with him before I was married.
Mm-hmm.
Or if before he made that choice, that
mm-hmm.
decision, he could stay with me temporarily. And 3 months into the stay, I said, have you thought about where you're going? He said, what? I said, this was a temporary arrangement, right? Do you remember that? He said, yes. I said, your time is up. I said, I told you, I'm not living with somebody before I'm married. Well, we're living together. Yes, it was a temporary arrangement. I meant what I said. And then we started talking about, what about marriage and stuff like that. And And he said, well, if you got married, would you want to get married? I said, I want to be a June bride. Well, I said, well, what month did you think about? He said, well, I want a September wedding. I said, that's nice, but I want to be a June bride. And I don't know what happened, but we dropped
What month were you having this conversation in? Do you remember?
February. Yes, I remember. Okay. It was not even Valentine's Day, but it was around there. It was the beginning of February. And the next day or the next weekend or something, he said, well, I think that June would be okay. I was like, excuse me? We were married June 21st. Wonderful. And from February, I threw together a wedding. And we got married in a small little church upstate New York in a town called New Paltz. And we had the reception downstairs because people were coming from 3-4 different states. My sister came from here to New York. Mm-hmm. And people were coming from all around. So we just made it convenient. And it was a good thing because it poured rain that day. Poured like you have no idea. And I was a lovely bride.
I bet.
Yes. And my son gave me away. My father didn't like that too much, but my son gave me away. And it was a lovely, lovely event. My sisters and his daughter were the bridesmaids, and it was a rainbow wedding. They had a lavender, yellow, a maize, and a desert blue or dusty blue or something like that color. Those were the rainbow wedding bridesmaid dresses. And his brother was one of the... I think his brother was the best man, or maybe he saw one of his good friends.
This is wonderful.
But it was lovely, lovely, lovely.
So did you ever, you know, I'm thinking love letters because ultimately I kind of always go to that. Did you ever write like a simple thank you letter to your sister for saying, why don't you move out here?
You know, I don't think that I had, you know what, maybe I did. Mm-hmm. I think I did in a card, a birthday card or something, because her birthday was August 7th, is August 7th.
Sometimes you think back about what was the original motor that started all this motion.
Right.
And so often you can pin it to one little sentence.
Yeah, I think I have thanked her. If I haven't, no, I'm pretty sure that I have. I really, because, you know, and I fuss about, believe it or not, I fuss about being here in California, compare a lot of things to New York.
But I
really love it here. I really like it here. I love it here. And I am very grateful. My sister, actually, she is a motivator for me to do better. I love photography. I'm a really good photographer.
Oh, yes, I remember
I'm a
that
fabulous
now.
Photographer. And my sister encourages me and has from the very beginning when I lived with her to do it, take it to another level. Because I do it as I just take pictures. Mm-hmm. You need to start selling those. Those pictures are better than some pictures I've seen. You need to enter contests. You need to do this. You need to do that. And so it went from these little tiny 2x3 cards to 5x7s, and they're really, really, really lovely.
So
and
people can buy these now.
They can buy my cards.
How do we do that?
Very difficultly.
No, because you're not in stores.
No, I'm not in stores or anything. But it's still, you can reach me at 775-685-0657. Now, I don't take a lot of pictures of people. I take pictures of people, but that's not what I do. I take nature. Conservation, bees, bugs, flowers, you know, all mostly nature. And I've got an eye that, you know, all of us can see things. All of us can see things that other people can't. Mm-hmm. Some of us see a lot more than other people can't. And some people just see the same thing differently. Mm-hmm. I see things differently. And then I can photograph it. And then you can see what I see. My sister is my greatest
patron.
Patron, mm-hmm. My biggest patron. She buys more. A couple of weeks ago, she wanted a picture that I had framed that I had at a sale that didn't sell, and she wanted to. She said, "You know, I really want that." And she said, "You know, tell me how much, and then bring it down." Now we were going on vacation, so I said, "This is a pre-going to Hawaii gift."
How nice!
So
yes.
She must have like 7 or 8 of my pictures in her house, different sizes, huge, some huge, some small, some cards, and
so she's really on your side.
Oh my God, is she on my side?
Okay.
I love her so much.
Oh God, now there's a love letter for you.
It is a love letter.
What's, Can you say her name?
Her name is Avis.
Avis. Okay.
And her and my son are born on the same day. So it was a double, it's double love on August 7th. That's her, that was my son, was her little birthday present. Well, he's not little, he's 5'11" or something like that.
But just dear Avis, I know you are always on my side. I love you so much.
And how grateful I am that you asked me to come out here.
Love,
and
we don't know Love Jones.
Love Jones.
And stick it, stamp it and stick it in the mail. I bet she'd be surprised.
Oh, she won't be surprised.
No? Oh, okay.
Well, she may be surprised.
You never know.
She may be surprised. She'll love it.
Yeah.
And I think I will do that. I just sent her 50 cards for her to pick out, and she picked out 30 of them. And she's like, oh, God, I just wish I could take them all. And she could, you know, but, you know, you have to rein it in sometimes.
Now, is she married?
Avis is divorced.
Mm-hmm. So she's been married.
She's been married. And she has one son named Devin. He's got to be 6'6", 6'7", mm-hmm. something like that. Really big guy. Sweet pie. He's a sweetie pie.
Mm-hmm.
Really handsome. All of our family is good looking.
I can't see that. I can just see you.
Well, all of us are good looking.
Look at what the dimples.
All of us are good looking. We don't make ugly children.
That's nice. Okay. Well, on that note, I want to thank you for bringing your gorgeous self over to me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jen.
Oh, I just love the way you tell a story. And they're always...
I love that you asked me to come here. It's such a pleasure to sit with you, to be with you.
Spread
and
a little
share
love.
And to share the love. Yes. That's right. Absolutely.
And talk about things people like to talk about.
Right.
Like, you know, loving people, even though at their hardest moments.
Right.
Like you say, and I'm going to close on this, I guess, we've all done that and we've all been that.
That's right.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you.
This is great. Well, I wish I could just sit here for a long time more, but until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And remember that there's always a reason to drop a love letter, even if it's a little note, in the mail to somebody. You make your life better and somebody's life better. So until next time, goodbye.